So there might, I hear that little door beep. That means more people are coming in, and that's fine. We'll just give them a minute to get settled in. But for those of you here the first time, my name is David Maclis. This is class number 5, but you're all right being here during, oh no, this is class number 3, I'm sorry, of 5 classes. Just keep everybody on their toes. This is the 3rd class, and it's a series of 5, and it'll be repeated again. And I think, Chris, can they get this on a flash drive so it's, we keep it on the computer out there? Probably next week we'll have tonight's on, maybe. So, for those of you that are, this is your first time, have you been doing something with meditation? This is kind of all new to you a little bit. I mean, it's, you know what it is, right? Okay. And we're not going to levitate. So I'll just give you the heads up on that. So this is Meditation 101, session number 3. We're really just kind of getting into basics. This is not a, it's not something you learn quickly. It's, those of you who've been here for a while, correct me if I'm wrong, it's simple, but it's not easy. There's degrees that which you can kind of develop this. You never stop developing it. When you do, you leave this world anyway. And it's, you know, it just keeps getting better over time. Nothing's going to happen quickly. I do some volunteer work at a youth prison, and one of the students asked after a 3-minute sitting, asked, well, when's it going to happen? And I said, well, this is as good as it's going to get. And he never came back. So just to let you know that if you think something's going to happen, you know, it's not. Nothing, it will eventually. Something will happen eventually. So what we like to do is, if you would make sure that your telephones are off. I tend to just put mine on buzz. I don't know if that's any better. But I'll turn it off, I think. There we go. Restrooms are outside there. We don't charge for teachings, but if you want to give money to keep the lights on, there's boxes located around on the outside. So, and then when we do a meditation, this will be a review for the people who have been here. We had a couple different types that we talked about, and I'll go through that some more tonight. We'll spend some time talking about the different types of meditation. And then I'm trying to think back to class number 1, so I apologize if I seem a little scattered here. There are some books out there that are very helpful. Meditation for Dummies is actually a very good book. There's Kay McDonald's book, which is a very good one, and there's a number of them out there. I think it's a particular shelf. We have some of the meditation books out there. But you can find material. And there are also the material, if you go to the website, some of you might have already done this, there's handouts that are available for this class. And are they all available now, or are they just putting them out as we get the classes? They're all there, okay. I think there's 9 or 10 or something, 10 of them. And those are very good, too. They're the same meditations. There's some additional ones out there that we don't get a chance to cover in class. And then tonight I'm going to start throwing in a couple that aren't on the website, too. And there's a lot of different things that you can use as a focus of meditation. We divide it into kind of focused meditation and analytical meditation. And I'll talk more about that tonight. But when we sit on either the floor or chair, there's a certain way that you want to sit when we do on a meditation. And if you're sitting on a chair, you're welcome to come sit on the floor, and you're welcome to go back and forth, too. There's no problem with that. I encourage you to try a Zafu if you've not ever done that before. It takes a little getting used to, but once you get comfortable on one, it's easy to sit with. If you're sitting on the floor, and you're sitting on the cushion, the zafu, they're called. Sometimes it helps. There are, if you want to stack two of them up, that's fine. If you sit towards the front of the pillow, it pulls your hips up higher and lets your legs hang down, your knees hang down a little bit. And that has a tendency to straighten out your back. Otherwise, if you're sitting flat on the floor, our backs tend to curve. So that's the purpose of that. And if you need, again, another one to give you a little bit more oomph, that's fine too. If you're in a chair, it's best to sit with your feet flat on the floor, your back not against the backrest if you can. So if you can kind of sit away from the backrest a little bit and try to get your spine straight. We try to get our spine like a stack of coins, you know, so it's kind of straight up, though it's got a little bit of a curve to it. There are 7 points that we focus on. The legs, again, if you're on the floor, if you can cross your legs, fine. If you can't, you know, they're going to be crossed in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, if you can do a half lotus or a full lotus, that's great. If you can't, just whatever's comfortable. Feet flat on the floor if you're in a chair. Our arms are at, we usually just kind of either put them in our lap, or you can set them on your knees is a good option too. There's a traditional pose in Buddhism, and Buddha up here is doing this, right hand inside the left and the thumbs touching. And then we try to leave it away, open up from our body a little bit to allow, that's mainly allow some air circulation. So we have legs, arm, back, our head, the crown of our head should be pulled up a little bit. Imagine it's kind of hanging by a string like a marionette, and then your chin will drop down just a little bit too. Your tongue at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth, and that's to keep the saliva rolling down your throat instead of out of your mouth. And then your eyes can either be closed or partially open. And there's some meditations at some point you do with your eyes wide open, but we'll just stick with closed or slightly open, whatever's most comfortable. Typically, if you find yourself a little sleepy, it's better to let a little light in. And on the other way around, if you're a little over, your mind's a little overactive, you can kind of close. And then there's a couple different meditations that we'll do. We talked last week about the 9-round breathing. I'll do some of that. There's a lot of visualizations that go along with some of this. But we're going to inhale. Use your left hand and close your left nostril and inhale through the right side and envision kind of this pure light going in and down into your lungs. And then we'll exhale. We plug up the right side and exhale through the left. And we do that 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And then we reverse. We plug up the right and inhale through the left and exhale through the right. And we'll do that 3 times. And then we do both nostrils in and out. And again, as you breathe in, try to imagine a white light going in. And then when you exhale, imagine impurities leaving your body. So you can kind of picture soot kind of coming out, all the negativities coming out, and it dissipates out into the space there. And then after we do the 9-round breathing, I want you to just count your breaths or focus. Those of you who've been here for a while, you can do a sky meditation or something, but just try to focus on your breathing. And you want to focus on your breathing, and if you want to count your breaths, that's fine. In and out is 1, in and out is 2. And as your mind drifts, and I say as it drifts because it will, once your mind gets off your breathing, I want you to gently pull it back to focus again on your breathing. And if you're counting, start at 1 again. All right. And the objective is not to force yourself to come back to your breath, but to remind yourself you're not focused on your breath and bring it back. We're trying to develop our ability to focus. Okay. And then I'm going to do a little bit of an analytical meditation. We'll talk more about those tonight, but I'll go ahead and introduce one tonight on change. And as I read this meditation, I want you to really kind of drill in on what I'm saying and think about what we're talking about, okay? we got it all. I won't ask him to repeal that. So get yourself comfortable, feet flat on the floor or your seat comfortable in the Zafu, back straight, arms in the proper position, your hands either on your knees or in your lap, top of the head up, jaw down, eyes closed, tongue at the roof of your mouth. All right, we're going to do the 9-round breathing. Breathing in through the right nostril. And exhale to the left. Two more times. Then reverse it, in through the left, out to the right. And we finish that both sides. In and out. Pure light going in, negativities like soot coming out. Then just focus on your breathing. If your mind wanders, bring it back gently. I want you to think about how everything is changing moment by moment. Think, is there anything that is not changing? we know on an atomic level, everything is moving and changing constantly. But think about your body. Think about as you breathe. The oxygen enters your lungs as you inhale. It's picked up by the blood cells. It moves throughout your body and is delivered to the other cells. And as it continues to move through your body, it picks up gases and other waste, transported back to our lungs, and expelled as we exhale. Throughout the entire day, the number of breaths we take in, our body takes in new materials and expels the old ones. We're constantly being rebuilt. The components of the food that we ate became part of our bodies earlier. Old materials are excreted. Our blood cells die every 120 days. New ones are constantly being made. Every 4 weeks, our skin cells die and fall off, as new ones are being created from the products we've eaten, what we've breathed in. Since I've started this discussion, some 30,000 skin cells have died per minute. And what's remarkable is each one of these cells that quietly dies can be traced back through an unbroken chain of cell division backward in time through an almost unimaginable 4 billion years to the earliest forms of life on this planet. Quite literally, we're not the same physical body we were a year ago. You're not the same physical body you're going to be a year from now. In your mind, scan the room around you and think of any object at all and ask, is that object changing? The clothes you wear, the furniture, even this building, they're all changing. What did this building look like 5 years ago or 20 years ago? What will any of those objects look like in the same amount of time going forward? Stop and think that even every other human in this room will be gone 100 years from now. Just try to drill in and reflect on the nature of change. Realize everything is changing, so anything is possible. Go through the analytical piece of that, follow that along pretty good. Anybody have trouble with that? So how those of you that have been coming for a few weeks, how has it gone the last week or two? Yes.
I've been finding it a lot easier to start like we did with the 9 rounds.
Uh-huh.
I just sit and try to do it, forget it. And I still can't get past 5 minutes. I lose my patience, but I notice a tremendous difference when I start with that and then try to focus on the 9 rounds.
So when you start with the 9 round, it makes a big difference? Uh-huh. Oh, good. Okay. So you have a hard time with more than 5 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for weeks.
You got the 5-minute barrier, huh? Can you get 5 minutes and 10 seconds? Yeah. Yeah. You might have some block. Some people do that. I mean, just go 5 minutes and 10 or 15 seconds. And from what I understand, you will get past that. You get past that. But, you recognize that there's an obstacle there, though, too. So that recognizing that is a big deal. It's really big. So that's good.
But it really is a practice because the 9 round, we do that every Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with that, and I know how it works, so I can see the same thing with meditation. I just keep
chugging along. That's it. Huh? It's perseverance. There's a whole book in the Lam Rim on perseverance. Yeah, so it's important. It's just keep working at it. You can't get discouraged by it. So, and I think it's common. People again, they're expecting something is going to happen, and they feel like they kind of get hung up somewhere. But you'll get past that. So, other things. Anybody else have anything you want to share? In the last couple of weeks in doing this on your own, my leg's not getting comfortable here. Anything? Yes, sir.
Why isn't it okay for a person to meditate for 5 minutes and come out and then go back and do 5 minutes again? Rounds or innings.
That's another good alternative. That's another good way to do it. But that is fine. That is fine. Yeah, that's a good. That work out pretty well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Where they sit for 90 minutes or something?
3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of why do we meditate? To have serenity.
Right.
I have that most of the time.
Yeah. So if shorter sessions, and there's literature that says stop when you feel good. So maybe that's a good point too. If you're feeling bad at 5 minutes, stop at 4.5.
Can I ask two quick questions?
Please.
So I try to meditate in the morning because I heard that doing it before bed is no good. Is that true?
No, I don't think so. You heard it was no good because
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I mean, there is a risk you could fall asleep. The thing is, experiment with different times if you can, because you'll find something that works out well for you. And there's no reason why, if you want to do it in the morning or during the day, you can't do it at night too. And I use it to fall asleep. Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't. Wow. Wonder why. Was it a credible source that told you that? Oh, Jill?
This is my second time doing it.
Did Jill say that? I'll have to have a talk with her.
And my other question was,
I didn't know that.
On days when my mind is about to explode and I can't even get to 3, should I force myself to get to 5 or stop?
No, I wouldn't force yourself. No. Well, I don't know. It's your mind, I'm not going to give you any absolutes in this. The whole purpose is to become familiar with your own head. And the more you mess around with trying to figure it out, the better you'll get and you'll figure it out. So, what was the last question? Should you force yourself to do five?
When my mind is racing, I don't know if I should keep going and suck it up and start counting your breaths, or if I should just call it quits.
So your mind gets racing. Okay, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about there's two characters that'll trip us up. Laxity or sleepiness, which is probably why Jill says don't do it before you go to bed. I'll have to talk to her about that. I'm going to ask her about that. We share notes.
I think she meant if you're lying down, though. I think there was that distinction.
I lying down? What do they call it? A death pose? Is that what? I'm not a yoga person. You know, you just lay there. Corpse. I do a body scan, I'm out. Now, anymore, it doesn't, you know, but that, and the prisoners use that as a way to fall asleep, you know, and it allows them to fall asleep with peace of mind. So maybe I wouldn't rely on that as my sole practice. Maybe that's where Jill's coming from. But, you know, I wouldn't, if I'm saying I'm going to meditate for 5, 10, 15 minutes a day, I wouldn't say, all right, well, I'm going to do it every time I go to bed. That's probably, you're not going to get very far. You know, you're not going to get past falling asleep. So, but, you know, try different times during the day. In the morning, if the morning is no good for you, that's fine. And then we'll talk about what to do if our mind's racing a little bit and what to do if we start to get sleepy and how to kind of counteract those. So, anybody else have any comments, words of wisdom? Yes, sir.
I had heard that also, but then in some other classes, I heard there were certain meditations that to do while you're falling asleep, like the death meditation. And, you know what, the death meditation, I took a course about the Bardo Sage.
Okay.
All of that was a good one to use that you weren't on.
So you heard that you should do that while you're falling asleep.
Well, that there were certain meditations that were conducive to falling asleep.
Okay, but not that you shouldn't do that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that, so I'll have to... No, you might not have. You know.
That you're not supposed to do it to fall asleep because then you'll never get anywhere. That's probably what she meant.
As your sole source of meditation, yeah. Right. Yeah, don't... I'm not going to say there's not a lot of absolute don'ts, because there are certain analytical things that you just don't want to probably get into. I don't know what they are offhand, but for the most part, if you're just counting your breathing or just trying to do the mind like the ocean or the sky, you know, whatever, you can do that. It's a great way to fall asleep. So. Other comments or questions? Feedback? So part of our goal, again, for those people that are here for the first time, is this: we're trying to find a time daily to do some meditation. And if it's no more than 3 or 5 minutes, that's fine. Yeah, it's 3 or 5 minutes. You know, take the same amount of time you'd take to brush your teeth and give yourself that option to do it like that. And slowly, slowly, you'll start to find it's very enjoyable and addictive. I suppose, and you begin looking forward to it. And you can find different times throughout the day. You know, if you can sneak off somewhere and do a little few minutes of just counting your breath. So the two types that we talk about. And I'm sorry. Again, I'm kind of jumping. I'm trying to go back to square one a little bit. Try to find a place if you can that you do this every day. It doesn't have to be a formal place, but try to use the same space. And then when you go to that space, go with the intentions of doing the meditation. So the term, the Sanskrit term for meditation is GOM, G-O-M, and that means to become familiar. So the whole idea behind meditation is to become familiar with our own minds. We're real familiar, but we only think we're real familiar with what's going on out and outside of us. But the idea is we don't know a whole lot about what's going on inside our own heads. And we're really not very comfortable with it until you start doing this practice. Most people if you ask them to sit and do nothing but count their breathing after about, I've tried this with my mom. I hope she doesn't listen to these things. You know, I just don't have time. I've got too many things to do, you know. I can't just sit there and do nothing. And the whole purpose is to sit and do nothing, you know, except drill our focus in on something. We're trying to build our focus up. So you have to kind of push yourself. It's like physical exercise. We start out very lightweight. And, the rep is recognizing we're no longer focused on our breath and bringing our mind back to it. So don't get discouraged because you're not focused on your breath. And it's like, I keep losing track. But the idea is to recognize that you're not focused on your breath and bring it back. Okay, it's a form of, I call it metacognition is kind of the technical term. We're able to observe our own thoughts and then recognize that we're watching our own thoughts. And then we can begin to control that and build some discipline over a period of time. And so there's two, we kind of clump them into two main categories. There's focused or stabilizing meditation, and then there's analytical meditation. And the some of the visualization meditations, I'm not quite sure where they go. It's probably more on the focus, but we're not going to talk too much about that. The visualization we did with like the 9-round, when you picture the air going in and the negativity's coming out. So the stabilizing, the purpose of that is to be able to focus our mind and build and strengthen our ability to focus on something. Okay, and that takes practice. So it might be that we focus on our breath. We might be that we focus on counting our breaths, or focus just on traveling up and down the breath and try to be as aware of it as possible. You can focus on an object, you know, a rock, a flower, or something like that, a candle, a holy object, what they call, you know, one of these pictures maybe, perhaps, and try to focus on that and recreate that in the mind. And that's, again, the purpose is to kind of strengthen our ability to focus. And once we've kind of honed those muscles, then we begin to use, and I think this is where the real power comes in, is we begin to focus on things. And we can focus on things like change. The little meditation we did on change, was there anything in there that you would say is not true? I mean, I tried to pull all scientific, factual kind of stuff for the most part. So we recognize on an analytical level that everything is changing moment by moment. I mean, we really get that if we stop and think about it and drill in on it. But we live our lives as if that's not absolutely not true. We live our lives as if everything is going to be just the way it is right now, right? You know, that brand new car I bought, it's going to look just like that 3 years from now. You know, everything. The person I married, she's supposed to be exactly the same way she was when I married her. What happened about that, you know? But we live our lives as if, and we got a train here too, if you're not, that visits us. We live our lives as everything is absolutely permanent. But if we take the time to drill in on the fact that it's not, slowly, slowly we can begin to live our lives as if things are not permanent. You know? They do death meditations, and that's a big deal. And it sounds kind of morbid, but we live as if we know we're going to live forever. But we know we're not going to live forever. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that we begin to do these analytical things on reality, and then those realities become what they call realizations. So I'm trying to think of something. It happens all the time. Of course, I can't come up with something. So we have knowledge of things, and then there are things that, everything. So I'm driving my car. The first time I drove my car, before, when I was a kid, I couldn't imagine driving a car. Okay. As I got closer to 16 years old, I began to anticipate that this was going to happen, and I began to, take driver's ed, and I actually learned how to do it. But when I first started driving a car, it was a lot of very focused, I was driving, You remember that? And now, how many of you drove here tonight without even thinking about driving, right? I mean, it's just, I have people say, I don't remember driving. I've done that before. How did I get here? I don't remember even driving here, A realization is when it just becomes so natural, So when you can focus in on some of these things, like impermanence, and then you finally get those, you begin to get some realizations, and there's people that have these realizations, and they live their lives as if everything is impermanent. And it's and that level of reality is enlightening, right? But then we sit on our cushion, and we try to develop our sense of reality, and then we get up off our cushion and we go back to what we define as reality, and we start playing the game all over again. I said it's kind of like, I'm always hesitant to use this analogy. I'm always afraid I'm going to Santa Claus, right? Do you remember when you found out the truth about Santa Claus? You didn't want to believe it. You thought maybe Christmas would go away or something. But then you abandon your old thoughts and you changed it. So, by this, our samsara, or the life that we live in, is like we kind of believe, it's like living as if that were real, but it's not real. Something else is real. We just don't. I didn't say that. Yeah, okay. I'm not saying nothing. All right, that's cool. I'm not saying one way or another. All right. So we do focus meditations to build up our sense of focus, and then we begin to analyze things. And there's a bunch of things we can analyze. We can analyze things like compassion. We can analyze our prejudice. We analyze our own false beliefs about different things, about people, about whatnot. And we realize that we're making up stories. We're making up stories about the guy who cut me off on the way here, on the road. And I probably made up a negative story about him, But I could have made up a positive story about him, and I didn't. I don't know what's going on in his head. So we create these stories all the time, and we believe them. We believe them, and we like them. They're like our little soap operas that are going on in our head. We play them over and over again. So anyway, focus meditation and then analytical meditation, and those two kind of go in hand. Sometimes I think of focus meditation as I'm polishing the lens on the microscope. And then analytical meditation is I actually put a slide underneath it and drill in on it. So the purpose of the focus is to develop that. And you think about stuff that you do, job, work, problems that you have. Do you use those skills? Do you want to, or do you try to? Is that what you aim to do? When you first started your job, was it easy? Might have been. I don't know. But we try to. I mean, is there any parallels between this and what we try to do in reality? What do you think? I can stay quiet a long time. We'll burn up all of our time. I don't want to do that.
You were talking about sitting meditating and then getting up and going out into the
yeah.
suppose it's the best way to take that with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm at the point where it's, you know.
You said, I'm sorry, it's ideal to be able to take that with you?
I suppose it would be ideal that you can take that, you know, if you have moments of clarity when you're meditating, that you are able to take that with you. You know, I can reflect on just a few moments for myself where dealing with someone who's, you know, perhaps normally difficult to deal with, but doing so in a way that, you know, I'm not putting a lot, I'm not, if there's a confrontational conversation, you know, I am not then assigning all these, there may be meanings being thrown at me.
Right.
And I'm just letting the words come at me and I'm taking it for what it is. And it's a very clear moment then when you're using those skills from the meditation in the real world.
Right, right.
And it kind of, I'm not very eloquent about this, but it does help me see, anyway, kind of what is and isn't real.
Yeah.
In the real world.
Okay.
When somebody is, for example, being confrontational with you in a conversation, you can get defensive and do all these other things, but then assign this has meaning and this has meaning, and you're
yeah.
taking all these meanings that aren't really there.
Yeah.
But you're taking offense at this and taking offense at that. But applying those skills from the meditation to that situation and just kind of letting the words come and letting things happen and letting the situation happen, and then it diffuses everything. And
yeah.
Kind of this clear moment of, oh, wow, this person is very angry.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And
I'm not saying you don't deal with it, but you don't react in a way that assigns more meanings that aren't really there.
Right.
Yourself.
Right. That's a great example. So you don't get pulled into that person's story with your own counter story, I think.
Yeah.
And just keep it creates a dance that never has a good ending to it. And it ruins your blood pressure on the way, you know. So there's a health effects too. But to disengage with that. And it's kind of fun to find yourself disengaging with something like that. It's a little spooky. Am I right? Because it's like, I've never acted this role before. You know, I've always acted the role I was supposed to act, which is, you know.
What you can see is the person's very angry.
Yeah. No, you can feel some. Then you can begin to feel some compassion for somebody when you begin to think, "Wow, they're angry." It's worse on the inside of their head than it is out here looking in. You know, and that's powerful when you can start to have compassion for someone who's got that level of anger. But just to pull your mind out of the normal routine is kind of liberating. A little scary, but it's kind of liberating. And, you know, and Jill, I know Jill talks about this. I think this is great. She says, you know, when you first begin to interact with somebody and you don't engage the way you have historically, because, you know, you're part of their story, right? Where those people in our lives act the way we expect them to act. They play the roles that we've expected because over years of habits, right? But when somebody stops acting the way that we would expect, we don't know what to do with that. You know, and it kind of throws them off a little bit, and then that's kind of scary because you're not sure what's going to happen. But it's usually a good response that happens with that. But that was a good example. But you know, other things that we do throughout the day, it's a matter of we try to learn something new, and we try to focus our concentration, and we try to learn it. So we use these all the time. We should be using it all the time, but we typically don't. Jon Kabat-Zinn. Some of you are familiar with Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based stress reduction programs or something. I love this little quote from his book. He says, we really, when it gets down to it, only have two things that we're doing in our lives. We're either practicing being mindful or we're either practicing mindfulness or practicing mindlessness. There's only two things that we're ever doing. And we get to choose, you know. And most of the time, we're all practicing mindlessness. You know, we're just kind of doing our thing. And creating ruckus for the person we just cut off. I didn't even think about it. You know, I cut somebody off on the road. And I'm wondering what his story is about me now. Right? But it wasn't an intentional thing. I was just being mindless, you know. So those are the two things. And then the two guys that we kind of wrestle with here. The drowsiness, if we're doing meditations on our cushion, the sleepiness that kind of comes into play, and then the other one is the distraction or the excited mind. And those are kind of the two little guys we're always having to kind of battle with. We had Venerable Rene, I don't know if any of you had a chance to hear the teacher that was here a few weeks ago. His specialty is meditation, calm abiding meditation, they call it. But he said when you're trying to deal with that, it's a lot like tuning a string instrument. If you get too loose, you know, we tend to drift off a little bit. If we tighten things up too much, we get too excited. So it really is, we're trying to find that perfect pitch on that string. So as you practice this, you know, you'll find yourself drifting, either sleepy or getting, you know, thoughts just keep popping up in your head, and you can't keep that from happening. So those are the two that we're trying to balance against. And we struggle with those actually in an external level too. You know, we're either focused really intently on something, or we're trying to focus on something, but we either get sleepy, get bored, sleepy, or, you know, our mind starts to wander. So we're just trying to practice those skills. Anybody have any suggestions for, anybody have struggles with those two things? Sleepiness or overexcited? We can say something?
I was just thinking about the focusing. I know I try to be mindful of just everyday activities, like doing the laundry, working in the yard or whatever, making sure that I'm there and my mind's not in the future,
mm-hmm.
dwelling in the past about something that happened earlier. And that can be really difficult.
Yeah.
I guess maybe the meditation, training the mind, facilitates that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The mindfulness is just being in the present moment, is really. We talked a little bit about that earlier, the difference between, you know, concentration and being mindful. So with the concentration, we're trying to develop a laser beam focus on something. Mindful is just kind of open to things that are occurring, but being very aware of what's happening in the present moment. And to your point, most of the time we spend most of our lives, I do anyway, outside of the present moment, either thinking about what happened to me or what I'm going to do. And I miss the present moment completely, which is kind of a shame. I've missed my whole life, you know. Either worrying about something or thinking about something's going to happen. Most of which, you know, we worry about the future, most of which never really occurs. We really have no idea what's going to happen from moment to moment. And we've got, again, that sense of permanence kind of leaks into a lot of that too, you know. I know for sure I'm going to be here tomorrow. Man, I don't know that for sure. You know. But we live that way, right? I've already got plans for next week. So, some things to help us with, like distractions or drowsiness. So if you're easily distracted, if you find your mind jumping all over the place, try to drill back in on the breath. We've done that. Try to firm in on the breath. if you can imagine, try to picture an object in your head and try to picture it as being very heavy. Okay? That kind of visual, so these visualizations kind of help pull our mind back to, you know, kind of bring it back down. So we're loosening up the strings a little bit. So sometimes we'll use like images or whatever and picture them heavy and maybe small too. Engaging in a short, sobering meditation, such as death or impermanence, is sometimes helpful to kind of get our mind back down, you know. And there's some, you know, death meditations don't sound like a lot of fun, but there's some pretty good ones that you can. I think they're in some of these books, and you can find stuff online too, Buddhist death meditations, and you can kind of drill in on the fact that, you know, we might not be here tomorrow. The next day is not promised to us, you know. And think about everyone. And I said at the last of that meditation, you know, everybody in this room is going to be gone 100 years from now. And that, you know, that's kind of an interesting thought. You know, everybody, you can go to the Empire State Building, look out on the city and think, everybody I'm looking at is going to be gone in 100 years.
Well, you don't know if you'll be here moment to moment.
Absolutely not. Yeah, right.
I was watching a show where, scientific show.
Mm-hmm.
Look in a mirror, you're actually looking at your future self because the light takes like, back into your eyes, you comprehend you're looking at yourself in a mirror, but it takes like less than half a second, so you're looking at a very small fraction of yourself in the future.
Yeah, I guess it would be the past, wouldn't it? Yeah, probably. Yeah. Different time. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and there's no, you know, my wife started reading the obituaries. But, you know, if you look at the ages of some of the people and or in the cemetery, I worked in the emergency room for years, and it is, you know, I stopped to think that how many people that came in that were in car accidents and fatal accidents, they had no idea that morning. I mean, it wasn't like they had no idea that was happening to them, you know. So again, if you can focus on something like that, not uplifting certainly, but it tends to keep your mind from racing. It kind of locks you back into some sort of reality. So yes, sir.
Isn't it a very integral, important part of Tibetan Buddhism, though? It's the whole acceptance of mortality.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the Dalai Lama talks about frequently the value when you accept that you have a finite life, that you operate from appreciating what you have.
Absolutely, yeah.
So even though, yes, and I just had a loss of a family member, you know, it wouldn't be my preference for it to happen, but we don't get to make the operation.
No, you're right.
So the better I get at being tolerant of it being the way it is,
yeah,
the more happiness I can have.
Yeah.
During the times when life is the way it works.
I think you're absolutely right, you know. And I don't want to go too far down that path, but you're absolutely right. And the Dalai Lama does death meditations daily, and thinks about impermanence. So again, there's some books out there, some pretty good things that you can find on death and impermanence. But you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a kind of an integral teaching in the Buddhist tradition is to think about that. But you see, you know, you have people that have something relatively terminal, and I mean they're very alive, right? So even though their body says otherwise, their mind is often very focused on gathering as much as they can right now. So All right, other things, I just want to kind of get the rest of this list. Check your physical posture. If you're too distracted, sometimes if your head's too high, lowering it a little bit. If you have your eyes open a little bit, close them. So kind of try to find, there's physiological things you can do to pull it down. And then always be patient with yourself. Don't get angry with yourself, because that only just makes it worse, right? So try to be gentle with yourself. That's real important. And then on the other hand, we have the drowsiness or the dullness, and that's the one I have the most trouble with. I get sleepy, and it's not because I do it at night, but I do get sleepy if I sit for too long. Sometimes I'll begin to think, am I awake or am I sleeping? But I know that if I think that, then that's kind of interesting. At least I'm aware of that. And there's a whole lot of stuff on lucid dreaming. I don't know if anybody does anything with lucid dreaming. That is an interesting topic that there's a lot written on, too, Buddhism. If you get sleepy, check your posture. Your head may be too far forward. Try lifting up your chin a little bit, opening up your chest, maybe open your eyes a little bit. Okay. You can turn up light in a room if you have that capabilities. One of the ones that Geshe-la teaches is if you visualize a seed, kind of a round seed, and you inhale, and it sits here at your abdomen, just below your navel, and you kind of hold your breath a little bit, and then you shoot it out the top of your head when you exhale. And he actually says, pay. And he says it pretty loud. And he pictures this seed shooting out the top of his head and going out into the sky and just kind of opening up. And again, it's a visualization, but it'll help keep you from getting drowsy. It'll help kind of wake you up and open up your mind a little bit to do that visualization. So check if there's a depression thing going on. That might be worth some seeing a clinician about, I suppose. And then making sure that you get enough sleep is the other thing, too. So anybody else have any advice on... Yes, sir.
I had a teacher say to have one or two ice cubes in an empty cup when you come out of your meditation, because you were drowsy, just take the ice cubes in your mouth and swish them around and just put them back in the cup and go back to your next work. And this was someone who believed in doing rounds.
Ah, okay. There you go. Yeah, and experiment with things. That sounds like a great one. Ice, something cold, And it might be the room is too warm. We have heating and air conditioning issues here. It usually goes from being real hot to real cold. And I find that when it gets too warm, of course, you start getting drowsy. So.
Mm-hmm. Something to drink.
Yeah.
That way, if you get drowsy, you just take a drink.
Take a sip. All right. That works good. All right. Any other comments? I'm supposed to break up into small groups and talk about obstacles that you might have had, but we have a lot of new people. I'm not sure if that would be beneficial or not at this point, or if we just kind of keep on talking.
Can you talk a little bit more about the analytical meditations and what techniques are for those?
So analytical meditations. We'll do some more over the next couple of weeks. We'll do one here in a little bit on a negative experience. So, maybe one analytical meditation. There's a handful of different kind of afflictions that we have. Anger is probably the most prominent that most people have. And I don't mean by, anger is a matter of degree, all right? There's irritation, and then there's like rage, right? And I, when I volunteer in a prison, those are the people that rage is an affliction for them and gets them locked up often. But those are all it's an affliction. And we'll talk about anger a little bit, but we can kind of drill in on our reason for being angry. So like the person that cuts us off in a car, right, on the highway. If we sit on that and observe what's going on, see, most of the time we practice, we rehearse the negative stuff in our head. We play that tape over and over again. But we can change that tape. We can begin to question whether there's validity to that. And then as we begin to kind of question that, we can kind of drill in on what's wrong with that picture and begin to change the story a little bit. Attachment, that's a good one. So think about things that are attachment to buying things, right? We're very attached to owning stuff in this country. We think there's a pleasure that comes from it. We think that if only I get that, whatever that, fill in the blank, right? If only I get that, I'll be happy, you know? But you think about when you buy something, you know, there's kind of this anticipation leading up to buying it. You make a purchase. And then how long does that happiness sustain? You know, usually, I guess it depends on what it is, but usually it drops off pretty quickly, right? Has anybody found the thing? Let me know. Is there something out there? I mean, even Geshe will talk about that. He'll talk about, you know, the guy on the television, you know, they saw this guy that had all these onion choppers, right? So he sent away for once. He said it looked like it was going to work really good. But, you know, it didn't work very well, like the guy on television. It was really hard to clean. The stuff got caught in there, and he couldn't get it back together. And, you know, so he recognized his delusion with thinking that that was going to create a level of happiness, and it didn't. So if you can go back on things that you've purchased and kind of drill in on, you know, does that really create happiness for me? Or, you know, he says everything we buy has got a chunk of suffering built with it. You know, it's built into it. And it's true. I mean, that thing, you know, we're not to be miserable. And the suffering comes from our not being happy, it not scratching the itch that we thought we were going to be able to scratch with that. If you spend time sitting on that and analyzing that in reality, you'll start to not be so attractive to those little things. It'll start out easy, right? Those little things at the checkout line won't be so interesting anymore. And then you can start to let go. You know, you find yourself, I know that's not going to do it, you know? So that would be a form of analytical meditation where you're drilling in on something and begin to kind of question it. That would be attachment. Pride is one. The anger, we'll do something here with anger in a little bit. You know, and there's things you can do to, I don't know, the impermanence is a type of analytical meditation. The death is a type of analytical meditation. Did that answer your question?
So what does that look like in your head? And because I'm a very analytical person, so.
Okay. Thinking about it.
Why was I so pissed off when this happened?
That's it.
Is that what it looks like?
That's what you do, but don't. Well, I don't want to say that's what you do. Don't play the negative. Don't. You know, don't. We do a lot of meditation on negative stuff all the time. We're real good at that. You know, we've already got the argument figured out that we're going to have this conversation with somebody next week, and I already know what my argument's going to look like. All right, so we're good at practicing the negative stuff. So you want to be careful not to do that. Please.
For like analytical meditation, can you overanalyze it where you're just thinking too much about it and trying to analyze it way too much? It seems like you could, it could go to that extreme if you're trying to do that analytical analysis, I guess.
Yeah, and I might not be doing a good job of describing what it is.
Because a lot of times you just want to kind of see what thoughts were there today, and you just breathe in and out, and you kind of see that without having to analyze it or go through that, but you see what happened today, where's my thought process go, and be able to refocus, I guess, your mind on the breath and get it back to where you want it.
right. So you talked about not engaging with somebody, and so the one meditation we're going to do here in a little bit is we'll think about something that was irritating to us, and replay that story, and then look at how we might have done it differently, and then begin to replay that story, the more positive one. The whole purpose is to build a positive mind, okay? So if you're doing anything that's making it more negative, that's where we want to stop. You don't want to do that, okay? The whole purpose is to build a positive mind. We can do analytical meditation on... in the prison, we'll talk about... you know, these people in prison, that's a miserable place to be. But when we stop and think about, there's an analytical meditation called Precious Human Birth, okay? And if you stop and think about, here you are in Raleigh in prison, but imagine what it's like, first, you know, you can go back and look at animals. Imagine what it's like if I was born an animal. Okay, where I would spend my every day worrying about getting my next meal or getting eaten by something, you know, getting eaten alive by something, you know, and kind of drill in on that, and then think about what it's like. We live here in the United States, and some people argue that's good or bad, but imagine what it's like living in another country, you know, and we'll do a meditation on water. And we'll talk about how fortunate we are to have drinking water. You know, that's just amazing. But we don't see that as amazing. We see that as just kind of, we take it for granted, right? Now we're looking for better water. Tap water just isn't good enough, you know. Or, you know, I've got 5 food lions within 3 miles of my house, you know. And we've got more food in our pet food aisle than most countries they have in their whole grocery stores. That's pretty amazing, you know. So I can do that with these prisoners, and all of a sudden, I mean, they're getting 3 meals a day. There's countries where if your family doesn't bring you food and clothing, you don't eat, you know. And so they can begin to see that, you know, like things could be worse. You know, but we don't look at our lives in that perspective necessarily. So you might Google some analytical meditations, and you know, read them. And there's passages from some of these books. Some people would even, you know, if they're Christian, they'll do this on a passage that means something to them. You know, or the Golden Rule. Just kind of really drill in on what does that mean. You know. Those are analytical meditations where you're thinking very deeply about something. And as you do that, as you become more and more and more familiar with that, it just begins to arise. And then, so they say, you end up with these realizations where that's just, you accept that. Geshe-la talks, he says we have coffee realizations. You know, the alarm goes off and we think, oh, coffee. You know? But when the alarm goes off and we think compassion, then that's a game changer, I guess. That probably didn't help you, did it? Okay. Other comments or anything? I'm sorry, I just start blabbing. I kind of missed some of this stuff. We're really not too far off. Let's do one of these meditations, and yeah, we'll kind of analyze something here. So we'll get ourselves, if you didn't gather, the little bell means come on back mentally, right? So again, if you're on a cushion on the floor, get yourself comfortable. Your hips should be a little bit higher than your legs, your knees. On the chair, feet flat on the floor. Your hands on your knees or in your lap. Your back like a stack of coins. Top of your head up a little bit like on a string. Your jaw down. Your eyes closed or a little bit open, and your tongue at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth. And I'm going to ask you to take a few breaths in and out. If you want to do a 9-round, if that helps, that's fine. Or just picture pure light going in when you inhale, negativities and soot coming out when you exhale. I want you to recall an experience you've had in the last day or two, maybe, where you got impatient or angry. You lost your temper with somebody. However that looks for you. Just kind of remember how it played out. Your reaction to whatever it was they said. Or did. We're going to kind of replay that tape in our head for just a moment. Just kind of relive it like it's real. Think about the physical sensation that you had as that occurred. Did your responding with anger help the situation? Remember what the other person's response was like. Then think about the disadvantages and the harmful effects that anger had. Think about what it had on your body physically. On your mind. If that angry feeling led to angry words, how did that make you feel? How did that feel internally? If there are other people around, how did that impact them? Did it make those people feel happy? When you see somebody getting angry, does it feel good? Did the anger make the situation better? How long afterwards did you continue to feel bad about that? Now imagine you're looking at that situation. It's like a camera, like a movie camera. You kind of zoom back. Watching the situation, the anger unfold. And then look at yourself and think about how you might have done that differently. How might you have reacted where you didn't engage? See yourself being calm. Picture a sense of almost compassion for the other person. Maybe a little bit of pity, but not really. You feel bad that they're suffering. And again, picture how your reaction, how you might have reacted differently that would have had a more positive outcome. Even if it was to do nothing. Were you able to play out the picture a little differently? How did it feel when you played it out differently?
Better.
Better. That's a good start. You kind of out of character a bit? Or no? Some people have a hard time coming up with a story. Anybody struggle with that? No? Some people have a real easy time coming up with a story. So, could you act that way? What would it take to act the way you wanted to, the positive way? What would it take to do that? Lots of practice.
Being enough in the moment that you can act the way you want to rather than the way you historically have.
Okay. So we act the way we historically have because of habit? Okay. And we not only have the habit of acting that way, but we've acted that way in our minds over and over again, right? I mentioned about having the pre-argument, you know? I do that. I know when I'm going to call this person next week. I know what the argument's going to be all about or whatever. You know, I've worked that out in my head. But is there any reason why you couldn't work out this scenario in your head ahead of time? I mean, all you're doing is changing the meditation. Instead of meditating on the negative thing that's going to occur, and it comes true, right? You begin to meditate on the positive thing that occurs, and slowly, maybe quicker than you think, that will come true as well. Because you're rehearsing the positive stuff in your head. You know, we have a tendency, and this is we're kind of hardwired. You know, it's part of the fight or flight thing. We're hardwired for the negative stuff. We're kind of, they said they were Velcro for negative, and we're like Teflon for positive stuff. But it's just, you know, it's built in there, and then we practice being lizard man over and over and over again. You know, we're going to either eat something, or someone's going to take our food or our goodies, or, you know, we're going to get eaten. And we kind of live in that mode all the time. But so if we rehearse the positive stuff, and, you know, the first time that you encounter the situation, like I said, it's going to be uncomfortable just because you're out of character, I think. I think that's where the discomfort comes. But and you might not do anything more than just catch yourself, oh, here comes that thing. You know, I had one of the students I was working with at Dillon that they walk between these buildings, and twice a week he would be on this walk, and coming the other way would be another group, and it'd be a counselor that they just didn't get along, and he'd always say something to her and she'd always say something back to him that was just as negative. And so they kind of always had this tension. And you know, I said, well, you know, this is coming up twice a week. You got a chance. It is perfect practice. What do you got to lose? You know, what do you got to lose to not engage with her? And then to begin saying something nice. See it as an experiment. You know, if you don't like her anyway, what the heck? And he did. And they actually ended up becoming pretty close over the course of time. Just because he changed the story. And he was impressed with himself because, you know, here he was just a kid and she was supposed to be the counselor, you know. So you kind of start playing the positive stuff in your head and just begin to kind of change the story a little bit. Maybe, you know, I use the example of the person that cut you off, and I might have said this. I'm sorry if I keep repeating myself, but, you know, we have a negative story about that person that cuts us off. Or the person that honks as soon as the light turns green. Or, I mean, I've got a whole list of little things that just irritate me that people do. And I always have got a negative story that goes along with that. But you can begin to develop a positive story that goes along with that. And, you know, maybe the guy who cut us off just got laid off. And he's got to go tell his family, you know. Or the person that's anxious behind me is, you know, found out they've got a child at the hospital. They're trying to get there. And they're not really upset at you. They're just like, come on, you know. And if you get that story going in your head, we don't really know. I mean, we don't know what's going on in that person. But you can change things a little bit. And it lightens you up, you know. It makes the world not quite as bad of a place that I always thought it was. And that kind of happens slowly. But it kind of creeps in, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, wow, people say, you seem to be a little more mellow than you used to be, or whatever. So pre-frame, we call it pre-framing and reframing. So analytical would be, you know, think about something negative that happened to you and find a way to replay that story sitting on your cushion in a positive way, or how I might do differently, or whatever. Turn it around. And now you've begun to change that little tape in your head, and you kind of pre-frame for when it comes up again. And if you do nothing else but catch yourself, and that's where the, you know, the mindfulness comes in. I said the trick is not getting irritated because your mind has drifted, but to recognize that it's drifted. And like, oh, there it is, and pull it back. Oh, here comes that thing called anger. What am I going to do with that? There's a story that somebody told me once about the guy, you know, walking down the street and falls in the hole and climbs out and goes on his way. And the next day he walks down the street, falls in the hole, climbs out, goes out, right? The next day he's walking down, he goes, oh, here's that hole, just before he falls into it. And he climbs out, right? The fourth time he's walking down, he remembers the hole, he goes around it. And the fifth time he takes a different street. So, you know, the first time you encounter this, if nothing else, it's like, ah, there's that thing called anger. You know? Then maybe after a period of time, you'll start saying, here comes that thing called anger, and I'm going to walk around that hole. Right? You did that. Here comes that thing, and I'm not going to do the dance that never ends up good, and I'm going to walk around that hole.
With delusions like anger and attachment, it's kind of, meditation is kind of like chiseling and digging.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's it. You go from, you know, if we can get the people at rage down from just being really mad, then that's huge, right? Really mad won't necessarily end you up in prison, you know. So you kind of chisel away. And I read that story about milk that one time. I don't know that I brought it with me, but, you know, over a period of time, the partner didn't bring milk home, and the guy blew up. And gets all upset. And the second time, you know, after practice, the person doesn't have milk, and you're just like, you grumble about it, right? You grumble under your breath. The third time, you know, you get irritated, but it's like, all right, we don't have any milk. And the fourth time, it's like, we don't have any milk. Now what do you want to do? You know, it just gradually goes away. It's just a gradual process. It's not going to happen, right? Like the kid said, when's it going to happen? It's just kind of, like you said, we're sanding the block a little bit at a time. So, any other questions or comments or anything?
On the anger, how about self-directed anger? Like when you get angry at yourself, why did I lose my keys? Why did I, you know, drop that or whatever? You know, just little things. Does that also work?
Yeah, I think it should. There's a meditation I read recently about being compassionate towards yourself, and that I've not worked with that very much, but I don't remember exactly how it went, but they talked about that. Were you going to say something?
I'm reading a book now on self-compassion, and it talks about just being mindful of it, and I've never heard of it this way, but they talk about mindfulness as being like a movie where it's suspenseful and you're grabbing onto the chair, and then somebody coughs, and you realize, oh, this is moving. You can step back, and realize,
that's good.
Anger's coming. And you get back into your life. So the way that they talk about mindfulness, or she's in this book, is that just be aware of every time that you're being really negative towards yourself, and just try to let go and be, you know, forgiving of yourself, and realize that everyone.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Thank you. Yeah, it's like, you know, the music, so now the music's coming, so it must be pretty intense. Yeah, I can feel the hair standing up on the back of my neck. So physiological response, though, is a good way to kind of tell yourself, ah, this doesn't feel good. And that should be an early warning sign that this isn't good.
I was taught that before you can love others or help others, you have to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And heal your own heart.
Yeah, I'd heard that, too. But... And I don't know, you know, I don't know what the meditations are that necessarily, I don't know what the analyticals are that would go along with that off the top of my head. I know they're out there, so you may have something.
Yeah, probably love and compassion, the meta meditations probably work best.
Yeah. So we do some equalizing, equanimity. I don't know that we'll, I think it's one of the handouts is on equanimity, if I recall. That's a good analytical one. It's on, you know, you picture a friend, an enemy, and a stranger, and you play around. It's like, it's almost like the little shuffling the game. Those labels are so impermanent, you know. The person who was our friend can become our enemy. Someone who was our enemy can become our friend. A stranger moves into one of those positions. You know, it's a constantly moving target. So the idea of the meditation is develop equanimity, they call it, which is we have care for everything, everybody. So you can pull that one out. That might be a good one to read. And be all right. It's all right with reading a line or two and then just kind of sitting on that. That's what I do a lot of, you know, to read on the Lam Rim or some book and then just kind of sit with that and really kind of practice that in your head. You know, that's what you're doing, is you're trying to practice what that really is like. If it was math or engineering, you know, we learn that stuff really well. We teach that in school, but we don't teach some of these things. So you have to kind of practice them the same way. So, 8:32, I'm sorry. Any other quick questions? I'll be around here for a few minutes, too, if anybody has any questions or anyone wants to talk anymore. So, and when we finish, we do a dedication here. So I'm going to try to... When you go to your place to sit, you kind of set your motivation. You know, think about why you're doing that, and that kind of gets your head in the right spot. And then when you finish your meditation, think about, you know, I did my exercise, and that's going to be a good thing. You know, so we did our meditation, and think about benefiting. You know, we're helping ourselves become better human beings. And we're certainly going to help the people around us. You know, if you looked at that video of you being angry, the people watching you react in a positive way, you know, you're seen as a leader. That's leadership qualities. So you're going to help those people become better people too. And that might be family members or, coworkers or whatever the case may be. And you took the time out this evening to do this. That's huge. We don't recognize how huge that is, but it is. All right. Thank you all. Be mindful going home.